Is the 19th of July, 2025, Saturday night, and we had the Juan Pry yesterday, so this is what we call a doubleheader, and we'll cancel the morning puja tomorrow, just because it's been a long day for many of us, and also a few of you were most likely, or at least one or two of you were up last night, so we'll have an open morning tomorrow morning just to come down for 6:30 a.m., morning chores, and so on, and then we'll get on with our day. So with the opportunity today, a group of us went up to Legat to Rangchen Geshe Gomde to pay respects to Chokin Nyima Rinpoche. He's the eldest son of famous Dzogchen master in the Tibetan tradition, Tolku Urgyen Rinpoche. And their center is doing very well, and got invited by the caretaker there to go up, and we've been paying respects every year. It's become kind of an annual thing, and kind of rolling it into our paying respects to senior monks at the beginning of Vasa in Thailand. We'll go around to all sorts of monasteries paying respects to senior monks and keeping connections going at the beginning of the Vasa period, beginning of the rains retreat period. So although it isn't the rainy season here in Southeast Asia, it is the monsoon season, and then we follow, there's all sorts of rules around this period of time, so we do still enter the Vasa period and then observe rules around it, ending with the Katina ceremonies. And so it's kind of building up here. To date, it's normally just been that we would go and see, pay respects to Lompa Mahaprasert at Wat Budanusan. That'll be happening on August 3rd. And he was really our only resident elder we would go and pay respects to, but now adding Chokin Nyima Rinpoche to it. This feels nice. There's really a sense that people are just people. The traditions don't really matter so much. There'll be different qualities, the Theravada, Tibetan tradition, Chinese, Japanese, and so on, but people are people. And the heart is the heart. And we're all brothers and sisters in birth, aging, sickness, and death. All religions, Buddhist, Christian, Islam, Hindu, etc. We're all brothers and sisters in birth, aging, sickness, and death. That happens for everybody. So right at the beginning of the teachings, we sat through a three-hour teaching. It was 2 1.5-hour sessions, roughly. And right at the beginning of it, Chokin Nyima Rinpoche was going straight into teachings on impermanence, I found it quite refreshing. And just really not holding back from driving that point home that everybody here, without exception, will die at some point. And so the contemplation of impermanence, the death contemplation, and bringing that up right away, and then that what differentiates a Dhamma practitioner, somebody who's practicing the Buddha's teachings from somebody who's not practicing the Buddha's teachings, is that somebody who's practicing is somebody who contemplates impermanence. So if we've never heard of the Buddha's teachings or heard about Dhamma practice, or we've never tried to put it into practice, then chances are we're not going to be contemplating death or impermanence. So a huge majority of people in the world will just be going about without these reflections, without these contemplations. And then when death comes, when old age strikes, when sickness strikes, when death strikes, which it inevitably will eventually, then it can hit us by surprise. And now, where did that come from? But if we reflect on these things, then we have time to prepare ourselves. And because this is just the truth of the way things are, so to prepare ourselves to not put up that resistance when the truth of the way things are just continues to manifest. So just to get our minds around that from the outset, that say in 100 years time, none of us will be here. Everybody will die. It's always been that way. And people can live to be 80 years old. The average lifespan in the United States right now for a male is 74.2, something like that. 74. So if you're an average person and you're a male, you'll die at 74. So that's kind of a realistic assessment. But then many, you know, if you look after your health, or you're fortunate, or you have the merit, the kama, maybe 80, 90. In a few days, Lumbar Pisano's mother will turn 102. She's still strong, running around with her wheeled walker. So if we're an incredibly rare person, that'll happen. 110, 120, that's pretty much the record these days. But even if we could live longer than that, even if we could live to be 200 or 300 years old, then we would reach a state where we're absolutely unrecognizable and then we would die. We'd still have to pass away. So he was driving that point home from the outset. And what that is supposed to do is supposed to give us a sense of urgency. This is what we call in Pali Sangvega. This gives us a sense of urgency to practice. Because however old we are, there's not really that much time. If we reflect on impermanence and the possibility of that anything could happen anytime, it's not to make ourselves afraid or to just be going about in a state of anticipating death all the time. It's more just to give us a sense of urgency to do wholesome deeds with the short time that we've been given. Do what we can to cultivate the wholesome and relinquish the unwholesome. So we can do that. It's not that we have to be thinking about death all day long. There's this famous teaching of the Buddha where there's different monks who are doing death contemplation, and the Buddha is asking various monks, how do you do death contemplation? So one monk says, well, I do death contemplation thus. I think, yeah, I could possibly die by the end of the rains retreat. The Buddha says, oh, that's not really the way to do death contemplation, not a skillful way to do it. So another monk says, well, I think I could, after another 24-hour period, after another day and a night, I could die, I could pass away. The Buddha says, well, that's still considered a bit heedless. And so the next monk says, well, I figure between sunrise and sunset, I could die, or between sunset and sunrise, I could die in that short of a period. And the Buddha says, oh, that's still a bit heedless. And the next monk says, well, I think in the time span it takes me to eat a meal, to start my meal and finish my meal, I could actually die in that time span. The Buddha says, oh, that's still a bit heedless. And then the next monk says, from the time that I can chew and swallow a mouthful of food, I could die. And the Buddha says, okay, you're starting to be heedful. That's starting to be heedful. And then the next monk says, I think between an out-breath and an in-breath, or an in-breath and an out-breath, and the time it takes to breathe in or to breathe out, I could die. And the Buddha says, okay, that's good. That's heedfulness. So the last two could be considered heedful, and the rest would be considered heedless in terms of death contemplation. But that can be interpreted that we need to be thinking of death with every breath, but actually that's just, we just need to remind ourselves that it could happen that quickly. I believe that's the aim of that teaching. And I've heard that Lumbar Biak takes it a step further where he says, actually, you can contemplate that death is happening in every moment. So death is the time-bound samsara, the conditioned nature of things is death. Death on it, in its essence, death is just impermanence. So the contemplation of impermanence is linked together with this. This is part and parcel of, this is the realm of death. Being born, we die, and it's absolutely normal, absolutely natural, and not something to be feared or something that's odd or strange. But it is strange to talk about it. It sounds strange to talk about it just because why would these monks talk about death so much? Why would they want to do this kind of contemplation, thinking of, yeah, I know I have to die. Just why do you have to tell me about it? Why do you have to keep talking about it and thinking about it? I know I have to die. I don't want to think about it. All right. But if we don't think about it, if we just push it aside, then we're not really going to be prepared when the time inevitably does come. And this goes for old age as well. And there was somebody who came to the monastery a few years back and was talking about just that their partner had left them after 34 years, happy marriage. He suddenly just took off, left that happy marriage, kids, a triathlete. So this person, she came to the monastery wondering, what happened? What's going on? This is strange. Everything seemed okay. And then the guy just takes off, has a crisis, and takes off, breaks everything off, disappears. So what happened was old age, which hadn't been previously contemplated. So the old age showed up. The energy started to decline. It couldn't be held up anymore. Couldn't do the triathlons anymore. And there was that kind of race against time to try to stay in shape despite the aging process. And at a certain point, we can't keep that energy going. So that's aging. That's the truth of aging. And because the guy wasn't prepared for it, he freaked out and ran off and after abandoned his family and didn't know how to deal with it, didn't have any coping mechanism for aging. I've also talked to my mom as a retired nurse, and she worked with people like this in Hawaii, and she talked about the same kind of thing. People who don't contemplate aging, that they can have a real strong midlife crisis if we don't have those contemplations. So the Buddha's teachings are all about how to remain in a state that's at ease and relaxed. And when we no longer resist the truth of the way things are, then we can finally be at ease with the nature of things. But it's not easy. And we might have this idea that at first we want to go to live in the monastery, live peacefully in the forest, and just live a quiet life and go about things in a very just quiet way. It's not that easy, because the mind will put up resistance. So the mind will put up resistance against various things that, say, if we choose to come live in the monastery, there's bowing, there's chanting, there's meditation, there's a daily schedule. So is that easeful? Is that very easeful? Is that peaceful? If our mind isn't at peace, then it's not. And we might think, why do they do all these things in the monastery? Why can't they just relax and have a totally open schedule and not really do anything? Then it'll be peaceful. So the mind can do that. My mind did that when I was first here. I actually criticized Lumbar Basano back before I had Hiriotapa, back before I knew what was happening. It's like some sort of labor camp here. They just make us work all the time. I can't believe I said that to him. It's one Vasa at the time, and a newly ordained monk. But I won't repeat his response to me. But if you think, oh, why aren't we just really relaxed all the time and don't do any work and just, why can't it be like winter retreat all the time? And then the next part of that thought train, the next logical thing is, and I hope people can just make me food and give it to me, and that I can just sit around and do nothing. But then everybody else can work to serve me. That's sort of, if you play it out, that's what it is. So it ends up being, oh yeah, everybody does their part. Everybody does an equal amount. That is a good ideal to, oh yeah, if we could just meditate all the time and not work and not have a work period and not do anything, but they can still feed me, then everything would be okay. So then what about them? Don't they want to meditate? Don't they want to? So you work it out. Oh, it's good already. It's good already. It's good the way it is. So then you can let go of the mental resistance. Things are good. You know, we work for 3 hours in the morning time, and then we might have some stuff happening in the afternoon, but we do have quite a bit of time to meditate if we put our attention on that. And if we're diligent with our practice, we can meditate 5 or 6 hours a day here at Abhayagiri. It's not beyond our capabilities. So we just have to make it a priority. But to really, truly be relaxed and live at ease takes years of training. It's not at all easy, because the mind puts up all that resistance. And then the body itself is never truly at ease. It might have these rare moments where it's completely, absolutely comfortable. And most of the time, the huge majority of the time, there's some sort of little unpleasantness, or if the body is completely pleasant, then it gets hungry, it gets thirsty, has to go to the bathroom. So just having a body in and of itself is a burden. So how can we be at ease with that? How can we be at ease if the body is always at least a little bit uncomfortable, or at least most of the time is a little bit uncomfortable? If not very uncomfortable, if we have some sort of injury or some sort of health problem, which is very common. So the body itself is a burden, so how can we be at ease with that? it really, I think it's the same thing as the impermanence and the death contemplation, the contemplation of old age. It's learning how to accept the reality of the body, the reality of just this is the way it is. And then the mind can learn to settle into a state of patient endurance with the burden that is the body, and can learn how to let go of all the resistance. So the Buddha called giving attention to perceptions of resistance. We give attention to those perceptions of resistance so that we can learn how to let them go. Then the mind can start to be at ease and start to be relaxed. And then we might find that a lot of the tension and the pain in the body was mentally caused by that tension in the mind, but it didn't seem that way. It seemed like our mind was relaxed, but actually it wasn't really that relaxed. So when the mind really lets go and really relaxes, then we might find that the body relaxes quite a bit and our experience of life starts to get a little bit more pleasant and we have a bit of respite and some ground to stand on. That's when the practice gets interesting. So then we think, oh, maybe it is possible. Maybe it is possible to be at ease. And then when we train in that way, the mind really needs a lot of this kantiparami, this patient endurance, because as the body ages, as the body gets older, it's not going to get easier. So we do need to train the mind for this, prepare the mind for this, or else the mind is just going to constantly be trying to escape and recoil, trying to escape through its old avenues, through seeking distraction, through trying to just ignore what's happening. And the Buddha's telling us to just face it head on, gain insight into it, look at the truth of the way things are. This is just the way it is, and come to an acceptance of it. And look at the feelings in the moment. This is the way to be at ease. We can look at these things and see that they arise and pass away. So feeling, for example, having arisen, it persists for a bit, and then it passes away and changes into something else. Another feeling arises, passes away. And then we can look at the mind, and if it's an unpleasant feeling, we can look at that hope that it'll go away sooner. If it's pleasant, we can look at the mind and that default reaction of, oh, I hope this stays for a while. But can we actually have equanimity where things just arise and pass away, and we can get into an equanimity flow where we're allowing things to arise and pass away without sticking to them, without attaching to them? We can't just do that by an act of will. That takes training and takes insight. So we talk about the path of training as Sila Samadhi Panya. That's a summary of the Noble Eightfold Path. We summarized into those three: Sila being virtue, ethical conduct; Samadhi being steadiness of mind or the firm establishing of the mind; Panya being discernment, wisdom, insight into the way things are. So we need all three of these, and they circle around each other. So when we have all three of these, and it takes time to start to get the results of our practice, when we start to get the results of our good actions, when we start to get the results of our generosity and our cultivation of patient endurance and our helpful attitude toward each other, there'll be a time lag. We won't get the results right away, but then when we do start to get the results of that, there'll be an upward spiral of contentment, well-being in the mind. Even if the body is uncomfortable, there'll be a sense of deep contentment and well-being in the mind. There might be that experience of we sit in meditation, we get into a state where we feel like we could just sit there forever. So that's the sukha vedana, that's the deep contentment that can arise in the mind through the practice. It comes with causes and conditions. It doesn't arise out of nowhere. It doesn't happen randomly. None of this is random. So it comes about through Sila Samadhi Panya. It comes about through the sense restraint and the ethical conduct, all these practices the Buddha recommended, the contemplation of impermanence. And then the mind starts to let go, it starts to loosen its grip on all that, wanting things to be a certain way. And then we can start to relax a bit. When we start to relax, it's only natural that we'll start to have goodwill for each other. We'll start to be able to have more harmony and well-being in our relationships with each other. We'll be more adaptable. Adaptability is one of the hallmarks of a mind that is gaining the benefits of the practice, coming to some of the fruits of the practice. maybe not the fruits we talk about in terms of states of liberation, but just the fruits of goodness, the fruits of cultivating goodness over a long period of time, that the mind will start to be more like water. It'll be able to adapt to different situations without putting up all sorts of resistance. The mind won't be rigid anymore. It'll be malleable, adaptable. As Chökyamo Rinpoche said today, you have to moisten the mind with the practice till it's soft and pliable. So these are just some reflections that came up today. I was quite grateful that we were able to go, and grateful to everybody here who helped prepare food so that we could go and work late last night in the kitchen and whatnot. And also to Yom Nong, who offered food on the way, and just everybody who helped spontaneously make this happen. It was very spontaneously planned yesterday and went very, very smoothly and was quite enjoyable. So thank you to everybody for that. I'm very grateful, and I think I'll just leave you all with those short reflections this evening.